It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickard is off today. Coming up on Central Time, a researcher says when it comes to reading to kids, it may be especially important for dads to pick up the books. First, Secretary of State John Kerry left Washington, headed for Cairo this morning. He's going to join diplomatic efforts hoping to craft a ceasefire agreement between Hamas and Israel. Israel launched a ground invasion of Gaza last Thursday after 10 days of Hamas rocket attacks and Israeli air raids. Kerry's trip comes after President Obama expressed concern over the growing number of casualties, and Kerry himself was overheard expressing urgency about the conflict in a phone call with a top aide. But what will Kerry do once in Egypt? How much influence does the U.S. actually have over the outcome of this conflict? Here with us to answer that question is Aziz Abusara. He's executive director at the Center for World Religions, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution at George Mason University. Aziz, welcome to Central Time.
Hello, thank you.
So with the negotiations themselves, John Kerry, the Secretary of State, has arrived in Cairo hoping to craft a ceasefire. Do you know who are the parties at the table here?
Well, the parties on the table first are the Egyptians, but the Egyptians alone won't cut it this time. So we know Hamas is in Qatar, and I think Qatar is going to be on the table, and Turkey is also perhaps is going to be involved as well. For people in Hamas, Egypt is not seen anymore as an honest broker, and so the only Arab country they seem to trust at the moment is Qatar. The last ceasefire proposal from Egypt was rejected right away from Hamas.
And does the United States have much sway over Israel right now?
I think it does, and I think Israel got to the point at the moment where ceasefire is preferred by the leaders in Israel, by Prime Minister Netanyahu. But both sides, both Hamas and Israel, are looking at this of how to not get out of this as losers and to look at their population and be able to communicate that they gained something and their goals were that they got their goals from this this war. So for Hamas, opening the Rafah border is the main thing. For Israel, is trying to communicate to the Israeli population that they destroyed the tunnels, that there will be no more rocket attacks. So both sides are trying to look like they won this battle.
Are those goals on both sides things that are likely to happen soon and end the casualties there?
Well, there is really, this is going to be more a spin probably from both sides, because neither was Israel able to destroy the rockets in Gaza, and definitely not all the tunnels. And for Hamas to get the Rafah border open is not, even if it does get open, they're not going to get what they wanted. But both sides are going to try to push for their population to believe that they got what they wanted. But that's very unlikely, and that's the trick of the negotiations going on now. And the ability of Secretary Kerry to convince the Israelis and to convince Hamas to accept a term that is kind of middle of the way for both of them.
The United States considers Hamas a terrorist group. Does that mean we can't negotiate directly with Hamas?
Yes, we will not be negotiating directly with Hamas. However, we talk to Hamas indirectly. We've done that before many times through the Egyptians. We've done it before through Qatar. So it's not unusual for the U.S. to talk to Hamas, but they do it through other groups. And these groups have always had a lot more influence, so it's even better in some ways to talk to Qatar or to Egypt than to talk to Hamas directly. But we're getting to the point of understanding that this conflict is never going to be solved by not including everybody on the table and by not looking at Hamas as a major player. And even if it is categorized as a terrorist organization, they are controlling a major part of the Palestinian territories and controlling about 2 million Palestinians in the West Bank, 1.8 million, that there is no way to move forward without talking to them.
Right now, we're just talking about a short-term ceasefire. Suppose that happens, there is a ceasefire. What next? I think probably, I won't say everyone, but a lot of people are hoping for a longer-term agreement, deal, framework, something that will make it so we're not back here in 2 or 3 or 5 years.
Right. Well, Hamas made a proposal just a couple of days ago where their starting point was a 10-year ceasefire. But even that, a 10-year ceasefire is not an end to the conflict. And if you put it into context, you have the whole issue of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the West Bank and Gaza, and this round of another conflict between Hamas and Israel is weakening the Palestinian Authority and really weakening the Palestinian President Abbas, who's, I think, out of everybody in this is walking out to be the loser in this round. And it's making the possibility of negotiations and peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians much, much less likely in the near future.
Does Israel see a more viable negotiating partner in the Palestinian Authority and the Abbas government as opposed to Hamas?
No, but in recent talks, even by Prime Minister Netanyahu, just his recent talk, I think Israel at the moment is looking at more a security approach to the West Bank, a security approach to Gaza, and much less into a more comprehensive agreement. The status quo have been going on for so long that the idea of an agreement at the moment is much less urgent.
I want to get into some of the work you've been doing in recent years trying to promote peace in the region. You've had a multilingual radio show. You've guided tours trying to involve Israelis and Palestinians and then people around the world. How do you make connections between people when there's been so much violence, so much loss?
Well, even at this moment, I think what's amazing is I have so many Israeli friends who are, I'm talking to them all the time. I have some of them who are connecting with people in Gaza. On the personal level, people are tired of this conflict, and so many people are looking for something to do, are looking for a way out. And so when we come with ideas that bring people together, it's always amazing how many will jump on it and how many want to be involved. In these tours, we have Israeli and Palestinian tour guides working together every day, spending the whole day together, meeting Israelis and Palestinians, hardliners, peace activists, everyone, and they get to become really friends. And that's probably the one thing that gives me hope looking at what's happening today, is knowing that there are people who will not give up and will not lose hope that there's a way out of this conflict.
But how many steps back is there in that kind of friendship when we have this kind of outbreak of conflict as we've had over the last couple of weeks?
Well, it does take us back quite a bit when you have bombings, when you have people getting killed. And we argue about it, too. So the Israelis and the Palestinians in these groups will sit down together and argue about what's happening and who's right and who's wrong and all of this. But I think those personal relationships are often stronger than the politics and by propaganda set up by both sides. And it does survive. And I've watched it even in the last, as I said, a few days. I watched Israelis sending condolences to their friends in Gaza who've lost members, family members. I've watched Palestinians doing the same to Israelis. And it's incredible. And it's unfortunate that most people around the world don't know about it.
You tweeted recently about the role of demonization, one side against the other. Is that really what your effort is aiming at, trying to have people meet humans on the other side of this conflict as opposed to the demons portrayed on either side?
Absolutely. Look, my brother was killed in this conflict. I was 10 years old when that happened, and I grew up being only knowing the Palestinian side and never knowing the Israeli side until I met people on the other side when I was 18. And that, to me, was an eye-opener, learning about who they are and where they come from. If you don't know those on the other side, it's so much easier to justify hatred. It's so much easier to want them dead because you don't know them, and you start believing they're not really equally human beings just like you. You start thinking they're kind of morally less like you, ethically, they don't have the same standards, therefore it's okay to kill them, it's okay to hate them. By getting to know people and by getting to understand them, getting to understand the point of view they're coming from, even when you disagree with, it will change your mind. And so a lot of what I do is demolishing that wall that separates the two sides, that dehumanizes the two sides. And it's Israelis and Palestinians don't know anything about each other at the moment, especially the people in Gaza, who the only thing they know about Israel are the missiles falling on them and the airstrikes and the Israeli tanks. And Israelis don't know anything about Gaza except the rockets and except what they hear about the tunnels. And so you can imagine if the only thing you hear about the other side is that they want to kill you, and the only thing you see is the casualties, and you see hundreds of kids and women and people being killed, it's no wonder that people hate each other. And that's what we have to fight against, is that demonization.
Aziz, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Aziz Abu Sarrar. He's executive director of the Center for World Religions, Diplomacy, and Conflict Resolution at George Mason University.